This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And it is beautiful here. We had a very few weeks of cold weather. It got down to 40 degrees and we were all freezing here. But it was nice for me. It reminded me of where I come from, Michigan's Upper Peninsula, because I am a Youper. And Youpers certainly think of 40 degrees as summertime. So I wasn't too bad. And I am so happy to welcome to the program today our Youper, who is still up there. It's really exciting for me to welcome Kristen Neva to the program. Kristen, are you there?
I am. Thank you for having me. And yes, 40 would be a heat wave right now. But...
I know. It's so funny. Wow. It. I don't know where to start with you because it is so exciting. Hoova baiva.
Baiva baiva.
Your author. Yay. Hey. Yeah. Okay. Well, it is so wonderful. There's my sister-in-law, my beautiful sister-in-law, Debbie, who lives in Pelkey, right there in Copper Country, gave me one of your books, Copper Country. That's the book she gave me. And then, of course, I had to read the other ones, Snow Country and Across the Bridge. And I'm not sure I couldn't decide which one I loved the most. I just love these books.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's really fun to bring this unique area to the written page and share it with others who
don't
either have been here and it brings them home, or they haven't been there and they're like, wow, is it really like that?
Yes, and yes. Come and visit. Well, I love them all, but I tell you, I was reading Snow Country, and that first chapter is so good. I laughed so hard, my jaw was aching. I read it once. I read it twice. I said, it can't be that funny. I read it again. And when Beth is on the road, I mean, it doesn't start funny because there's an accident, which, you know, one has up north on the dark highways. But when she is stopped by the trooper, that conversation is so funny because Beth is coming from California, and she's coming to the Upper Peninsula, where people are a little bit different. And just that play there, that conversation, I thought that was so brilliant. I'm like, she just captured it. And when the trooper says, she said, "You are not my therapist." And I love the line about hay. it was wonderful.
Yeah, and inspired by real life. My mom was a California girl, and after she married my dad and moved to this snowy country, she did get pulled over her first winter. The police officer asked her if she had a driver's license because she was driving so cautiously. So that inspiration came out of my mom's experience.
Well, it is perfect, and it's hilarious. It's really hilarious. I think I'm gonna keep that book next to me, and whenever I need a good laugh, I'm just gonna open and read that one chapter because it just captures the feeling of somebody who doesn't know the UP as we do. It's wonderful. Well, everything about the books. Of course, I love the names, all the Finnish names in there. So we'll talk about that. And of course, when you talk about the food, like panukaku, which I make all the time. And
oh, great!
Oh, I always make it. My family loves it. And of course, there's so many wonderful things. Now, I don't make pasties as often. My brother brings them down. He comes down. They're in Pelkey. I was born in Baraga.
Okay.
So,
yeah, not too far from where I'm at right now.
Exactly. Oh, so tell us about your books. They're standalone books, but they all sort of intermingle there with the type of people who you have just put in this book, bring out the Finnish community up there.
Yeah, they're small town fictions set here on the Keweenaw of Michigan, which is a rugged area, a beautiful area, and has its own unique culture with so many Finns coming over during the copper boom. It really kind of retained, even for non-Finns, some of the Finnish culture, where the street signs in the town where I live actually are in Finnish and English. So it does have some of these traditions, like sauna. People who aren't from around here would call it a sauna, but Upers are very adamant that it's pronounced the Finnish way. So you take a sauna and then you jump in the snow. So I like reading small town fiction. So when I decided to try writing fiction, I decided to write what I like to read, and what better place to set it than right here where I'm at, where all I need to do is look out my window for inspiration.
And you will certainly find plenty of characters around there, too. So it really works out very nicely. And yes, it is sauna, and my brother has one, a beautiful one that he built, and he does take that sauna and jump in the snow. And when I tell people that, they say, you're kidding, really? You're kidding. You know, because they go to the you know, these sweaty gyms here, and they go into one of their saunas. But it's not the same. It's not the same as the one where you actually have birch leaves and throw the water on the rocks, right?
Right, yeah, and the wood heat is more deeply penetrating. My mom has a real one, and we have a fake one in our house just because in the winter it's so much work to drain the pipes and whatnot. So, but yeah, no, we do enjoy our sauna, and it does lead to a lot of interesting scenes in the book, because when, like in Copper Country, when Amy meets her boyfriend's parents and they take her to sauna, you have a whole bunch of ladies in their birthday suits sitting there, and so it just leads to some humorous moments when you involve a sauna.
Exactly. You're very good at humor. I really, it's done so beautifully. I found myself, I don't think I've really laughed so much with any books like I've laughed with yours recently. I mean, it just, you know, they're, in some ways your books are very deep, because they do talk about traditional values. They talk about you know, deeper life connections, but at the same time, you have all this humor, which is absolutely delightful.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I find just the combination of exploring life's big issues with some comic relief a fun way to go about it. I mean, it's a kind of a lot like life anyway. We need to hold both the joy of life and the challenges of life in you know, we need to hold them both together. And so I try to do that in my writing, too.
Well, and I thought it was very funny when Russ in Copper Country.
Amy's boyfriend.
And Amy isn't exactly thrilled with the cabin he lives in. And you describe it beautifully, which reminds me, you know, I'm from Berriga, which is a really big city to us. We had, I think, 1,400 people at the time. But, of course, everybody, you know, when you get tired of living in a big city like Berriga, you had to go to the camp. So we had a camp out on Misery Bay. And,
yeah.
And so Russ is, looks around his cabin, which I would have called a camp, and he says, "It is a bit drab." I'm laughing my head off. Yeah, it's a bit drab, but it's beautiful. You know, we had so much fun living in a cabin like that. That who cares about marble countertops? It was. I've lived in houses with marble countertops that you never felt as happy as you do in a camp or a cabin on Keweenaw Bay.
Yeah, there's something about just being connected to the outdoors and to nature and simplicity. It amazes me, because this area, there's actually a lot of highly educated people here because of the universities. And so it's a rural area, but has people have a high level of education. And yet some of those people I met when I was writing Copper Country, I met with a professor who actually, she lives off the grid. So I was kind of getting some inspiration for Russ's situation. And it's just a lifestyle choice that people make because they want the simplicity of life. Now, Russ, he's a little jaded because he worked for corporate America and had a bad experience, and now he's just focused on being independent, so he might not be doing it for the same reasons. But up here, yeah, we have people who they live off the grid, and they like the lifestyle.
Well, my brother and sister-in-law were big in the corporate world, traveling all over the world, and then when they came back to Copper Country and just started living, I mean, it was such a joy for them. It was a completely different life, and they just love it there. And it's hard to explain to people. They really have to visit. Although, you know, my father, when they built that Mackinac Bridge, he said, oh no, we're gonna get more people. We don't need more people up here. We got enough people. The cheeseheads are coming across enough over here. We don't need to build a bridge.
Oh boy.
But it is so delightful to read your books. And in Copper Country, of course, Amy is, we don't know exactly, she's Italian or something, and so there's this religious difference or whatever that happens with the Finns, and who have their own churches. So it's the dynamics of the relationship between your characters is really great. I mean, you're really wonderful at building up characters.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I've grown to love them too, and I don't need to look far to find inspiration for quirky characters. So,
and you were mentioning education. Your towns are based on Houghton and Hancock, which of course is are the two big big cities there, and of course in Houghton, that's where the Michigan Tech University is. So you have so many foreigners there too to draw upon, which you do.
Yeah. Now I called my towns, I named them slightly different. Quincy, and then I named Houghton is named for the explorer Houghton Douglas, and so I call the town of Houghton Douglas instead. So it gives me a little more creative freedom because I don't want to have a snarky waitress at one of our local restaurants. We have several Finnish restaurants, but then so I have my own Finnish restaurant. So I don't capture the details specifically, but I capture the spirit of the area.
You certainly do.
So yeah, so that was my goal, and you know, I've had feedback from people outside of the area who like, wow, you know, I want to visit and see if it's really like that. So that's been fun. We'll see how long I can keep the series going. I hope the ideas keep coming, and I hope I get to see what happens in the lives of these characters as they continue to grow up. And
well, I think you have so much to draw upon, and it is funny that so many. Of course, we had the prison up there, but they closed that down, right? Did they close it down?
I think so.
Yeah, so you don't have any prison escapes to worry about. But there's really so much to draw upon that I think you can go on for years and years. And with your sense of humor, I think that you're going to have a great following. I read a lot of books. I get 10 or 12 a week. And it really takes a lot now for a book to stop me where I say, oh, wow, I really, really love this book. I want to know more about the author. I want to just see you grow as an author, too, because it's just exciting, isn't it, to be able to write?
It is, yeah. It's creating a world from my desk, which is fun to do.
So what's the weather like up there today?
It's warmer today than yesterday. It's in the 20s, which is where I like it because it's nice for cross-country skiing. I heard it's supposed to rain up to, or supposed to warm up to 36, which I don't like because they were saying something about rain, and I like to get out on the ski trail, which that's no good. So 20s is perfect if it can stay there.
And so tell us a little bit, how did you start writing?
Well, I started writing when I became a stay-at-home mom. My daughter, she's turning 13 now, and I stayed home to take care of her, and I needed a creative outlet. So in the middle of changing diapers and whatnot, I started writing and took some community writing classes, and I started writing children's stories, actually. And then 9 years ago, my husband, Todd, was diagnosed with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. So it's a terminal illness that causes total paralysis and eventual death, usually in 3 to 5 years, but he's progressing slower than many. And so then I started reading ALS memoirs, and I again turned to writing as a way to process the diagnosis. And then in reading the ALS memoirs, I realized there weren't that many out there written from young families. He was relatively young to get the disease. I mean, there's people who are younger than him, but he was just 39. And so we wrote our story, and that was kind of the beginning of thinking, okay, I think this might be a good art for me to pursue. And then in editing that memoir, I learned a few things about the craft of writing, and now here I am 9 years after his diagnosis, and I'm at home taking care of him while the kids are in school, and I again need a creative outlet, so I'm writing fiction.
And we'll pray that they are making such advances in the disease that things can change really overnight sometimes with the improvements that they're making in medicine. It's really quite incredible. And I think there's a lot of attention to ALS, which is very important.
Yeah. And even without that, I mean, the technology that they have now is just amazing, what Todd is able to do over the computer, and he helps me edit my books. And so it's kind of a team project for us to work on together as we're both at home, and a way to expand our world and for me to learn new skills, in the midst of a challenging situation. And then, like you said, the humor. I'm glad you said the books make you laugh. They make me laugh, too. And I've found that humor is one of the best ways to cope with the challenges of dealing with the disease. And so I watch some humorous sitcoms with Todd and enjoy laughing, but then sometimes I just laugh while I'm writing.
Well, as I said, I'm gonna everyone I meet, I'm gonna say, you just have to get this book. You have to get, just to read Snow Country, the first chapter. I think this they can use this in university courses. Go over to the university there and meet the English teachers and say, okay, when you're teaching a course, this is good. This, you should use this chapter because it is so good.
An introduction to the college students for what life here is really like.
Exactly. I always say to people, that first chapter is so important. That first chapter is so important. And wow, you strike it out of the ballpark with that one. I think it's a terrific chapter. I'm going to be raving about it forever because I just love it. You do have a theme sort of running through the books about sort of life, about finding the important things in life.
Right, yeah. I think I write that out of my own situation in dealing with Todd's illness. You really come to appreciate what's really important, and so I think that's probably communicated. And then my characters, there's no story without conflict and without pain or tragedy. I mean, something has to go wrong for there to be a story. And so, of course, just like in life, things go wrong for these characters. And their situations don't always change. And I'm careful with that, too, because I think sometimes, you know, we want to see, well, of course, in our own lives, we want to see the miracle or whatnot. But sometimes I think in fiction, too, we see miracles. But we don't always see that in our own life. And yet these characters, they have to persevere. And the situation might not change, but they change. And they become stronger. And so that's one thing that I try to do in the books is, like, in Amy's situation with her dad, I would have, you know, I mean, I've grown to love Amy. I've written her. And so essentially I'm kind of like the god of my books, right? But I just think my world that I've created is kind of like our real world, and there's not always easy answers or miracles. And her dad is really narcissistic. And so even though he doesn't, you know, make amends like she would like, she has to move forward and become stronger in that situation. And she does, because my characters do grow.
Absolutely. And one of the, I love the way that book starts with the finding of a piece of copper. Just tell us a little bit of that, because that, well, that's a great opening, because everybody then wants to know about the copper.
Yeah, well, a lot of these ideas, I mean, you know, they're not true, but they're based on a figment of truth. And there was, on the road that I live on, someone did find a huge piece of copper. I wasn't living up here at the time, but my parents, they walked out to look at this huge piece of copper, and I think the guy eventually sold it to a mineral museum, but there was some challenge of getting it off the land. And So I think maybe everyone up here would think, oh, wow, what if I could find copper? I mean, it's a huge, it was like the copper mining capital of the...
Of the world.
Of the world,
and,
yeah.
Of the best quality copper. Copper Country copper was the best. It was simply the best copper. And, of course, this, what they call float copper, it was copper that often fell off of a ship that was going downstate. And I know when we were kids, we just loved to visit in Hancock the copper mine. I love that.
Right.
That was so much fun. Now I love that you have at the beginning of the book the a glossary. So I'm going to say a few of the words that you have in the glossary, and you can pronounce them properly in the Upper manner, okay? So let us go through a few. So,
okay.
For Finnish for good day is?
Hyvä päivä.
Yeah. And Finnish for walk?
Oh, what is that one? That one I had, my mom actually speaks Finnish, and so I had to consult with her.
Kavala.
Kavala, there we go.
Okay, and the best, my favorite, and my... Again, I thank my brother and sister-in-law all the time. They send me down a wonderful bread with cardamom. What's it called?
Nisu.
Oh, don't you love it? Oh,
yes.
It is quite amazing. I'm so surprised that people don't use that spice as much as we do, because it is so, so wonderful. I'll skip Baska.
Yes.
Okay. Nobody needs to know that one. But a very important one is sisu. Sisu is something that, it means a great deal to Finns. Tell us about, what is sisu?
Yeah. Well, I think Amy is explaining it to someone, and she says it's like moxie. But yeah, it's a spirit of resilience and determination in the face of adversity. So it has this deep cultural significance to Finns and Finnish Americans. And my characters, yeah, they definitely have sisu and grow in their sisu. And Toivo Mäki, who's my super uper Finn, he tells Beth, I knew you'd have enough sisu to come back, because it does take a certain amount of resilience and determination to live up here with the rugged elements, especially our long winters and the snow and the snow removal. I mean, it really is a big deal. We get over 200 inches of snow every year, and we have to move it if we're going to go to work and school. And so, yeah, I mean, it's the it certainly breeds a tough people in this area.
Exactly. And, when I tell people 200 inches of snow, they're like, somebody said to me, "You mean 20 inches?" I said, no, 200 inches. And my brother's not happy when we don't hit that mark. I mean, he likes the more snow, the better. That's his attitude. So
yeah, I like to play in it, too. I lived for 17 years away from here in the Chicago and Milwaukee areas. And, I mean, I love those areas, too, and there's advantages to living in the city. But I did miss the snow, especially, now you don't have this problem so much, but there we got the cold without the fun
exactly.
of the snow. There was often not enough snow to cross-country ski, where I think if you're going to have winter, bring it on.
Well, you know, I think you're a fantastic writer. And I wanted to mention, while I have you on, that one of your children's book, Toothella, is absolutely adorable.
Thank you.
It's such a cute idea. I thought, well, how clever she is. And, well, she's a youper, so well, she has to be. So, of course, now you have a website that you want people to go to?
Yeah, Kristin Neva. It's Kristin, and then NEV as in victory, A, KristinNeva.com, and there's links to all my books and then some more blogs about this unique area where we live.
Well, I think that you are fantastic. I'm so thrilled that I got to talk to you today. And now you have the series is called the Copper Island Novels, and
yes.
So there's three of them right now. And what you're working on the fourth one? Yes.
I'm brainstorming still. I have some promotional activities I need to do for my latest release, Across the Bridge, and then also Toothella. I'm heading out to the schools and libraries to do some presentations. But I'm hoping come spring I'll sit down and hoping the creative inspiration will hit me for book four. But my mind is always working, so I have some ideas.
Well, I remember, you know, the snow is so wonderful, the time that we had the snow, but then that somehow when you have spring up north, it is such a joy. I remember my mother would wait for the first robin, and the thrill, I still, when I see a robin, I remember the thrill on her face when she see that first robin and she knows spring was coming, and just the joy of it. It was like almost a miracle when you saw something like that.
Yeah, there is something about the seasons that kind of gives rhythm to life. And just like life has seasons, when we live through these seasons and you experience the spring.
And
it's glorious.
And of course, the summers are wonderful. People, one of the things, anybody who goes up in the summertime, these long beaches, white beaches, are so beautiful. And nobody expects that. Beaches that look like Hawaii. It's quite remarkable. The only problem is we have black flies. Okay. So,
yes, and black flies also make an appearance in the book. Beth Sue's away. Choose away black flies, but it just depends on which way the wind is blowing. But yeah, that is one thing about our big lake with its beaches, and it's not as crowded. Now, I have been to Florida, and I do love the ocean, but the beaches there's a lot more people. Up here, we don't have that many people yet, so you can still go out on a beach that's really, really secluded, and you can be the only one
for miles
that you can see. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But of course, the wonderful thing about summertime is I'm always a youper. We have the best blueberries, the best raspberries,
yes.
Thimbleberries. Oh, it's like a miracle up there.
It is. Summers are glorious.
Well, again, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. And
Thank you for having me.
I will be telling people forever about your books, because I think they're wonderful. And I hope that, as soon as you have the fourth book, you'll come back on and we'll talk more about you know, just being a youper, and then we might even do a few youper jokes. You know, we youpers are subject to a lot of jokes, but
yes.
Of course, it's because youpers are known for being brilliant and witty, right? And
yes, and having the ability to laugh at ourselves.
Exactly. Just, of course, we didn't mention coffee. You know, coffee's also very important to youpers. So,
yes.
Do you like Trinary toast?
Yes. Yeah. Dip the hard toast in some coffee. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have actually gotten a little bit of flack on the coffee from people because when I was writing these books, and I still actually am, I'm in a loose leaf tea phase. I mean, I like a good cup of coffee too, but I've gotten some flack from people who are like, your characters keep drinking tea. What about the coffee?
Yeah, so, I mentioned this in passing because the truth is, most of us started drinking coffee on our grandfather's knee from the saucer. You know,
yes.
That's how I started drinking. And of course, in those days, the guys used to put the sugar cube in their mouth to drink their coffee. So I hope to see that in future books.
Yes, I think that is some feedback I've gotten from a lot of youpers. So I think in book four, we'll have to have a coffee.
See, I had to mention you have and mention Arco Coffee, which is the best coffee up there. My brother exports it to Florida for me because it is so wonderful. And I want to tell a quick story. My son went to California this past over the New Year's, and he was there, and he started getting these terrible headaches and feeling really bad and feeling really awful, feeling weak, crabby, miserable. He went to the, he couldn't figure it out. And then he gets back at the university in Madison, and he gets back and sees his doctor, and his doctor said, have a cup of coffee. And he had a cup of coffee. His headaches went, all his pains went. And he had been drinking tea over in California. You know, people drink tea in California.
Yes.
It was the youper cure for everything. So
coffee and the sauna.
The sauna. Exactly. So fourth book, let's have some more coffee. Okay?
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you again for being on Joy on Paper today. I think you are a joy. And again, the website is Kristen Neva, and it's the books are on sale online, and people can find them and find you, and I think they will be absolutely delighted to read your books.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, she's so sweet. Oh, my goodness. Let's have a few commercials, and then we'll be back. I have a few messages, and then I've got a very interesting author on today, so in a little while. Okay, here we go.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660. Or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back, and I am just waiting for a call-in from Jon Kabat-Zinn, the author of The Healing Power of Mindfulness, and I have been listening to this book. It's 7.5 hours of fascinating information on how we can sort of get in tune with ourselves. So I'm just waiting for him to call in. And meanwhile, I just want to mention a lot of you are... Well, several things. First of all, for all of you who are looking for an agent, again, I want to tell you, if you're looking for an agent, go to Publishers Weekly and go to the page called Weekly Deals. They have every week they have a listing of the big deals that have been made. And one that just happened this week, and this is one that you will all find interesting because it has some magic words in it. It's called six-figure advance. That's what you want, a six-figure advance. So somebody absolutely is a very, very happy person today because St. Martin's Press took two novels by Christy Clancy, including her debut novel, and six figures. Now, when I tell you if you're looking for an agent, you want an active agent. That's why all of those books that you see or the listings on the internet where you have a listing from A to Z, really, that's not the place to look for an agent because it's so important that you find an agent who is active, who is actually getting book deals. Now, the agent for Christy Clancy's book and her name is Marcy Posner, and she's from Folio Literary Management. And I'm hoping to have her on next month because she is an active agent. Boy, oh boy, she's active. That's what agents do. They get a percentage. And so the more they get for you, the happier they are. And the agents that get big deals are always listed here under the weekly deals. And it's really exciting. It's also, it gives you sort of an idea of the type of book that people are picking up, the agencies are picking up. And when you read that they get a high five-figure deal or a six-figure deal, or every once in a while, they even get a seven-figure deal. You know that that's an agent that you might, if you think your book is good enough, say, okay, all right. If it's not good enough yet, you should work on it and try to get a deal like that. It's not that you can't publish independently and make money, but it's always much harder. So if you can write a book that will attract an agent, do so. And I think I am just going to have my guy on in a minute, but I want to tell everyone also, I'm going to do a little seminar about query letters for all of you who are looking for an agent. So I will be announcing when I have that, and I will be just, we'll have it in some meeting place, and so I can talk to you all about how to write the best query letter ever. And then meanwhile, I'm just waiting for Jon Kabat-Zinn, and this is going to be an interesting, I've had hours and hours of listening to his wonderful Audible book. And I, as you know, I love Audible books, and I often have narrators on. So is John on? Okay, John, are you there?
I am here.
Okay, nice to have you on, John. Wow, you are amazing. And the name of the new book is The Healing Power of Mindfulness. And your website is mindfulness.com, so you managed to grab that.
Yes. It's not mindfulness.com, it's www.mindfulnesscds.com.
Ah, okay. because it's wonderful. This entire, well, the whole thing about mindfulness, of course, it's been around a long time, but you are, boy, you go to Wikipedia and you are like the expert that everybody is talking about. And
I don't know, because I haven't looked myself up on Wikipedia.
Oh, my, you should. But, well, you always have to, you know, you have to do
it's
that.
Helpful. If it's helpful to people, I'm happy to play that role.
Well, I think it is, and the wonderful thing about you know, I've been listening for hours is that you put a lot of things in perspective, and so why don't you explain what the theory behind the book for people who don't know about mindfulness?
Okay.
I had been aware of some of it because I had gone to a seminar where they were talking about mindfulness in relationship to Judaism, and so I had known
mm-hmm.
about it,
mm-hmm.
I got it on CDs and I listened to it, I thought, wow, you really captured something here.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to hear that. And also just to say, this audio book format is something that's really important, and it's important in the same way as your radio program is important, that radio has a kind of intimacy to it that when people are listening on the radio, that we can really influence each other by how we hold the present moment, which is what mindfulness is all about. So my reading, my own words, I write in such a way that I'm really consciously attempting to entrain the reader through the use of the words and the sentence structure and the paragraphs and so forth into an actual experience of present moment awareness. So the words and the text is actually pointing to inside to yourself and to your own experience. And that's what awareness really is, and that's what mindfulness is, basically just awareness. But I say just awareness, but we tend to discount that aspect of our human intelligence because we're so lost in thinking all the time that we think that's the end of everything, is the be-all and end-all is thinking. And we are not taught in school until recently, because now it's taught in schools all over the place, that that we can actually have this other dimension of intelligence that we can inhabit called awareness. And when we do that, then we can modulate our thinking, our emotional reactivity, our actions, and so forth in ways that cultivate greater health, greater wisdom, and it is healing. And my working definition of healing is that it's coming to terms with things as they are. So it's not fixing, it's not curing, it's not making everything back the way it was before this or that happened, but it's actually seizing the present moment and the opportunities to live in relationship with even highly stressful, unwanted things in ways that are healing and transformative.
Well,
and millions of people have shown, and thousands in scientific studies, that this is actually something that anybody can do and benefit from. But it's not really a doing, it's more a cultivation of what I call the domain of being.
Well, some people might think that it's just like meditation, but it's so much more.
It is meditation, but it's a real meditation is whether you're actually missing your life or in your life. So the real meditation practice is life itself, but if we're on autopilot for 10 or 20 years or our whole lives, then before we drop into our grave, we might actually have a moment where we realize, holy smoke, I got the whole thing wrong. I thought it was about this, but it was actually about that. And I was driving through my moments to get to better moments, and now I've run out of moments. Why is this moment not good enough?
So how do you think people should approach when they first get involved in? What should they do? Hello? Is he there?
Okay. Can you hear me?
Okay. We had
a little glitch.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I pressed the wrong button. That was my fault. So as we're listening together, can you actually feel yourself hearing? Can you know that you're hearing? That's mindfulness. You're hearing these words, and say, if I'm using the words to suggest that you feel your whole body breathing, whether you're in the car or whether you're someplace else, listening, can you feel your whole body breathing? And the answer is, of course you can. And so can you learn to actually ride on the waves of your body breathing moment by moment as if you were surfing, and actually stay in the present moment through one full in-breath and one full out-breath, and another full in-breath and another full out-breath, without artificially pushing or pulling your breath, but just letting yourself be breathed. And so here you are in the present moment, resting in awareness of breathing. Now, you can do that with anything. You can direct it towards awareness of thinking, or awareness of relationships, or awareness of how late you feel you are already, or how behind, or how much stress you're under. And then you can ask yourself interesting questions like, is my awareness of the stress that I'm under actually stressed at all? And the answer will be, no, it isn't. So then you could learn how to actually inhabit the non-stress dimension of awareness and then just get done what you need to get done, but without all the wear and tear. And that's an art form, and actually it ultimately becomes a love affair with the only moment any of us ever get to inhabit, and yet we're so entrained to driving through our moments to get the better moments. Plus, now with cell phones and so forth, smartphones, we're continually distracting ourselves so that we never have a moment that's really a moment of being, of pure being and non-doing. But it's right under our noses, 24/7, and what this book is about is, the first part is talking about the science of healing when you practice mindfulness, and the second part is the infinite number of different ways in an ordinary, regular day you can cultivate mindfulness, including aware of how much you interrupt yourself or how much you are checking your phone from time, you know, or have the impulse to check your phone, or, you know, how you relate to your children in the morning or to your work or anything like that. There's like an infinite number of opportunities to cultivate mindfulness during the day.
Well, you know, you're lucky. You have a great voice for this book, because it is a very relaxing voice. As I'm listening
I'm glad to hear you say that.
It's funny, as I'm listening to it, I actually felt myself sort of breathing along with you and slowing down.
Good.
I thought, whoa, this is really great. And there's so many wonderful things in this book. But
you don't need me. You could do that all by yourself. That's the whole point.
But it's
my voice might be helpful, but at a certain point, and this is the deep message of the book, is that, like, you know, life is your life, and you're in charge of it.
Well, I liked one of the lines that you said the difficulty... About the Corps of Engineers. Tell us that line.
Yeah, the Army Corps of Engineers.
Yeah.
So the motto of the Army Corps of Engineers, and my father used to tell this to me when I was like 5 years old, and it's something I never forgot.
Me too, because my father was in the Army. So.
Okay, so the Army Corps of Engineers, its motto is, the difficult we do today, the impossible takes a little longer. And I love that, because so much of the time we create barriers in our own minds by saying things like, oh, I could never do that. And, of course, when you say, oh, I could never do that, guaranteed you're never going to do that, because you're going to believe that thought, that I could never do that. But when you question that thought and say, well, who says that? Who's even saying I could never do that? Then all of a sudden you've created more freedom in your possibilities. And so when you start to be mindful of your thinking and your emotional reactivity, one of the things you see almost immediately is how much we create prisons for ourselves. And the stories we're telling ourselves that are creating the bars of this prison, they're all wrong. They're just not big enough. They're wrong. They're inaccurate. And your awareness is the door out, and it's wide open, and all you need to do is enter.
And this book
invites you to cultivate that.
And to start here at the beginning of the year.
As a way of being. Exactly, as a way of being, to cultivate mindfulness as a way of being, not merely as a formal meditation practice, but a way of living your life as if it really, really mattered. And so you don't need a resolution in New Year's to do that. All you need to do is start paying attention to not just me, listening to me, but listening to yourself.
And
ask yourself, who's doing that listening? Who is listening to oneself? What's that even mean? And that's the doorway into real freedom.
Well, I think that I also like that it is an Audible book. I love Audible books.
You do.
You know, they're just wonderful because they really, there's something special about them. And I like they mentioned when they sent this book out to me, that people who listen to Audible books read more, you know, books in general.
Yeah.
And it's just...
Yeah, because you have more time to do it. You can do it in the car, you can do it walking, you can do it all sorts of times where you can't, like, drive and read a book.
Exactly. Well, I think that this book is particularly good. It's wonderful. As I said, you have a great voice, and the message is so clear once you get into it. So I just want to encourage everyone to get this book, and I think that it's available, you know, online, wherever books are sold, Audible and all of those places. And it's called The Healing Power of Mindfulness. And your website is mindfulnesscds.com. And I hope that people will go there. They can learn more about you and about the CDs. And
Thank you, Patsy.
Well, I think it's you're really helping people, and that's important.
Well, I appreciate that. And ultimately, you know, I understand what you're saying, but I'd like to say that in my experience, although people think I'm helping them, I have to point out that they're really helping themselves. And that's much more inspiring to me, that people actually have, we all, by virtue of being human, have the capacity to actually do this interior work and have it actually transform our health and our well-being and our relationships and ultimately the world, too.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Jon Kabat-Zinn. And everyone, go to his website and get this wonderful book and help yourself. And everybody might have just a better year. That's what we all need, right?
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Absolutely.
Bye. Okay, whoa, that was nice. I've been listening to that. He does have sort of a hypnotic voice. It's fascinating to listen to him. Now, again, remember, I'm going to have a seminar on query letters. I'll announce it soon, where it's going to be. But if you're interested in learning more about query letters and seeing some examples and just talking in general about how to find an agent, I will have a seminar soon, and I'll announce the time and location so that you can sign up for it. And also, back to Publishers Weekly. It's available. Just go to publishersweekly.com and check out the latest deals. I love when I read about six-figure deals. Remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in Audible books, because Audible books are really, really fun. And of course, if you're really lucky and you know, the stars are all in line, someday you might hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be made into a film or one of those streaming videos, or on the Hallmark Channel, like I hope one day to see Carol J. Perry's Witch City Mysteries, because they are so, so wonderful and would make a wonderful TV series. And gosh, we need something new. I am so tired of the same old stuff over and over again. And I will also have a Hollywood producer on pretty soon who's going to talk about actually how they find scripts, because please don't fall for any scams. This is my last word to you today. Do not fall for any scams. If you have any questions, make sure that you send them to me, and Bill Larson will be here soon and answer your intellectual property questions. Okay, say something nice to somebody. I'm going to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, and I'm running out of time. Bye, Ed. He's saluting me. Bye. Okay, we're out of here.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City, Tampa Bay.